Say less, my G's.
It's time to talk.
It's trademarked at this stage, in fairness, yeah?
The examples that I get on this program and the people that I speak to over the years, I despair at the way people are treated.
Are you agree?
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Very mindful. Very trusting. Very demure.
Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show. Text 0868 104 106. The Neil Prendeville Show with Dwyer's Electrical. Four chilled. Paper-wise this morning, there's quite an amount of coverage of the weather that we're looking down the barrel of. You'd be worse now if you were above, they're saying, in Cavan, Cavan, Donegal, Monaghan, Leitrim and Sligo, because they're getting a status yellow ice warning for the next few days. Everybody's being told take it easy over the next day or two, certainly on the roads, because you never know what's down there. But those four will be hit by snow. There's a bit of a snow warning, you know, for Thursday, and we'll have to see if that happens for Cork, but really, it's up the country and in the Midlands. A story, or at least a couple of stories that I will be coming back to in a few minutes' time, involve appearances before the Cork Criminal Court, or the Central Criminal Court, which is sitting in Cork at the moment. Olivia Kelleher was there covering it for quite an amount of newspapers. She's writing in the Independent this morning about a man who raped his wife and two young daughters, has now been sentenced to 17 years in jail. She's got into the inside pages of this morning's Independent. But the story makes the front page of both the Examiner and the Echo, with the Echo headline, 17 years for rape and abuse. 45-year-old man, a cold, calculated campaign of sexual abuse and rape carried out over a 15-year period on his ex-wife and his two daughters. And that is one that I will come back to in a moment with Olivia Kelleher. The Examiner has the story also with Anne Murphy. His ex-wife reflected on the fact that she had been in a coercive, controlling relationship. He took away her confidence. He took away her self-worth. The judge concluded and said that there was no indication of any understanding by the defendant of the offences he carried out or the damage he caused. The judge said that he would hopefully reflect on this in jail over the next 17 years. It's absolutely shocking, and I don't mean to overly upset. I need to warn people about what I'll be talking with Olivia Kelleher about. It is upsetting. It would upset anybody listening to the court reports on that one. Man who had... there's another one that makes the papers this morning. In fact, there are three different particular cases that caught my attention over the past few days. There's another one that makes the Examiner of a man who had, and again, let me alert you, you will find this upsetting. A man who had sex with a 15-year-old girl actually texted a friend to say, she's about to become a woman. So he's been sentenced to 7 years in prison, and he got the final 18 months suspended. Thank you very much. So the judge sentenced 34-year-old Patrick Rogers of Mayfield. He pleaded guilty to the offence of engaging in sexual activity with a child under the age of 17. Here's what happened. The child was intoxicated and vulnerable, and she approached Rogers, and she told him that she was 15 and missing from home. And as the judge says, you took her to your own home and proceeded to have sexual intercourse with her. You dropped her off at a bottle bank and you left her alone. There was an abundance of evidence that what you did, that you knew what her age was. The child who was lost was exploited by you. And that's the story that makes the papers today that resulted in a 7-year prison sentence with the final 18 months suspended. There would be some would say, maybe more than some, that that sentence isn't long enough. So more on that, and there is in actual fact a third case that we'll also deal with in a few minutes' time. And sadly and shockingly, they're all on Leaside. We're hearing it from the Central Criminal Court sitting in Cork at the moment. Gloves off in the first... Gloves off? I watched it. I lost 2 hours of my life last night sitting down watching it. How many of them were on the stage anyway? Was there like 15 or what? Looked like 15 of them. I'm sure there might be 8 or 10. It was way too many. You can't conduct a debate with all of these people from all the different political parties all lined up trying to get involved in a conversation or a debate like that. So gloves off in the first debate? I don't think so. The coalition did. Well, what one thing that I did notice was that everybody, well, I shouldn't say everybody, but if I was to maybe one or two of the highlights, certainly you're seeing Fianna Fáil and to a slightly lesser extent Fine Gael turning on Sinn Féin and turning on Mary Lou McDonald big time last night. You know, turning the screws. it's like as if the main fear for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are still coming, is still coming from Sinn Féin. Now, if you watched it and you have thoughts on it, well and good. Text 0868 104 106. Maybe it will make up your mind. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see in that regard. One other promise from yesterday that I sat up and took notice to is a promise from the Green Party that if they are re-elected or they're part of the next government, will it happen? I have no idea. Will they be a coalition party of choice for the bigger parties? Don't know. They say doubtful, but if they do, they're going to examine the possibility of a four-day working week. So that should get them a few votes, shouldn't it? Everybody, you'd be paid the same, but you'd only work a four-day week. Mind you, this morning, the front page story making this morning's Mail is that a four-day week would cripple us. Businesses have warned the Green Party that the introduction of this four-day week will cripple the economy, will cripple businesses, will drive prices higher, and it'll be the end of an awful lot of businesses. And it would drive up prices. In fact, Brenda Power cynically looks at the state of Ireland 2024 after the general election. If we believe all of their promises, she says, all of these party promises and all of the things that they'll do after the general election. She's a super writer. She says, what a country we'd have. What a lifestyle we'd all have and enjoy if only everyone could be in power at the same time. That's in. Take all of their promises and put them all into a cocktail of government, and we'd just be living the life of the Bahamas or the Caribbean, where we'd be sitting back drinking coconut cocktails, whatever the case may be. She says, what a country we'd have. What a lifestyle. We'd have fabulously affordable houses, so we would. We'd have money coming out of our ears. We'd have all sorts of cuts to tax bans and USCs. She says there'd be caps on the price of food. There'd be caps on the price of childcare. There'd only be 9% VAT on everything. Energy bills would be absolutely slashed. We wouldn't be able to walk down the streets without tripping over a Garda Síochána, a member of Garda Síochána. What else does she say? Since there'd be thousands more of them on the beat, there'd be guards everywhere. 1,500 extra prison places for bold people. There'd be a new jail at Thornton Hall. We'd have free GP care for everyone under 18. The National Children's Hospital would be open. It would be the envy of the world. It's already the most expensive children's hospital in the world. I mean, she goes on and on. Every town, village in Ireland, well, maybe every city in Ireland, would have a Dart and a Lewis and a Metro. We'd have way too much personal time. We'd be all sitting back smoking weed because cannabis would be free for personal possession. Brenda Power's on fire this morning, lads, in the Mail. In fact, Jumbo Kearns is having to go as well in the Mirror this morning. The Beast from the East. He's talking about the public have absolutely no interest whatsoever in what politicians have to say about everything or anything for that matter. And then they try and look at the five key differences between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. Oh, God almighty, I'm losing the will to live. I suppose one of them, actually, one of the more interesting ones that we got yesterday was Fine Gael. Fine Gael saying that they're going to give €1,000 into a bank account for every newborn baby. People are easily bought, aren't they? They really and truly are. And there's a photograph then. It's just so stupid. He's an intelligent man, and I'm told that he's a really lovely guy. Don't get me wrong. But Simon Harris, with an overall on serving school dinners yesterday, is just a bit too far. Or Micheál Martin hanging over the side of the Kilmer Tarbert car ferry yesterday. Jason, I mean, somebody should tell Simon Harris that children in primary school don't have a vote. But there he is, nonetheless, serving carrots and what has he got there? It looks like baked beans and chicken nuggets or something. I don't know what it is. But anyway, there you have it. Meanwhile, back in the real world, a quarter of those living in poverty in Ireland at the moment are actually in employment, which means that the money that they're earning is so shockingly bad that they really are deemed to be under the poverty threshold. And it's a very important day today for men. And don't get me wrong, I think that, you know, every day is an important day for all of us, and we try and do the best they can. But from time to time, we have nice days that are celebrating different people. And today is International Men's Day. So we'll have more on that throughout the course of this morning. I mention it, though, because it ain't easy being a man, you know. We live like 3.5 years shorter lives than women. I mean, I see the story out this morning, 3.6 years shorter than women. Cancer's killing way too many. Cancer now is overtaken. Heart disease is the biggest killer of men. Like, a man now has a life expectancy of 80 and a half years compared to a woman at 84.1 years. That is so unfair. And it just goes to show how tough life is for men. No, no, but seriously, the four main causes of deaths now are cancer, circulatory problem diseases, respiratory system diseases, and external causes of injury and poisoning. I know it sounds very depressing, but there it is nonetheless. They look at the mortality rate between men and women, and prostate cancer is the most common cause of cancer in men. I remind you of that today because it's such a simple thing to keep an eye on. You don't have to go and have had, you know, in the past it was the finger up the bum physical exam kind of a thing. And that's probably the best way to go, but it's not the only way. They can also detect any issues with regards to prostate in men in things as simple as a blood test from your local GP. And if you're listening to this program right now and you're old enough to think or you're old enough to vote or get on with your own life, you need to get a GP checkup every year. You really do. And you need to get all of your bloods done every year. Just think about that. Like, think about renewing your car insurance, renewing your NCT, all of those kind of different things, and getting an annual checkup. Because there are so many things that are killing people. And I'm talking about men this morning. And men just don't seem to take it seriously enough. The risk of dying of cancer in men is 34% higher than it is for women. Tough being a man. Listen, I just don't understand it. And I'm not going to get engaged in this. I say that every day, but yet I keep on talking about the front of the Red Tops. Because what have you got? Jerry the Monk Hutch on the front of all of them. They have a serious buzz on for the Monk, don't they? The Red Tops. Front page of the papers again this morning. Photographs of his posters. I mean, they're only going to go and get this guy elected, you know. Maybe that's what the whole general idea is. And meanwhile, as the temperatures drop, and this is a story from the UK, okay, I don't know whether it's relevant here or not, probably not. They're saying that the UK's favourite drink, loves to us, what's the most favourite drink in the UK? Any of you say a cup of tea? Wrong. It rhymes with cups of tea, but it happens to be a G and T, by all accounts. It just wouldn't really do it for you, though, coming in from work or whatever it is of an evening at 5 o'clock and you're frozen with the cold and reaching for a bottle of gin and cold ice cubes. In all fairness, it just wouldn't do. I mean, get the kettle on and have a brew, I would have thought. But G and T, not tea, it's the changing face of UK society, I suppose. And then, don't you just love the changing language? And the English language is forever changing. You can't stop it. You shouldn't roll your eyes up to heaven and you shouldn't tut-tut. Language is always evolving. And there are some terrific ideas of it this morning with regards to the new buzzwords and the new language that the younger generation... When I say younger, it was young as 5 and 6 year olds now using words like Sigma, right? I always thought that Sigma were a construction company on the Lee side. They are. But Sigma also is an expression of independence. You're very Sigma. You're very independent. You're very kind of, capable of doing your own thing and doing it well. Some of the other words that are back, back in vogue. They're not back in vogue. They're brand new. There's a new word for woke. It's called Dei, as in Opus Dei, D-E-I. Hawk Tua. That's almost like onomatopoeia, isn't it? It's a new buzzword for spitting. Pookie is lovable. You're very pookie. Wasn't a pookie supposed to be something? Oh, that was a pooka. Something like a ghost or a spirit or a banshee. Other ones then, demure. And kind of over demure now. I thought it was funny for about a week or two and now I've moved on. Demure is, you're so reserved and you're so modest and you're so shy. There's loads of other ones. Brat is another word. It's for somebody who's unapologetically rebellious. Thanks be to God I recognise that, because that was always a brat, like. But there are loads of other words. Riz is kind of somebody who's very charismatic. There's a lot to keep up with these days, isn't there? And the top slang words. You can go and find them yourself, because how do they work out that these are all new and very much used? Google searches, apparently. There are other words as well. I mean, we've had great words here on Lee side that I would love to see come back into regular parlance. Like the hooky ha was a word we used to use an awful. A hooky ha is like any kind of an implement that you need to get fast. Pass me the hooky ha. It could be kind of a tool for fixing the car, right? It could be maybe a gardening implement. It could be a spanner. It could be a tin opener or anything like that. Any other ones on Lee side that we might make funky or cool, guys, get the younger generation to use again? Lapsy pa is another one, right? Because there's something wrong with them, but you're not quite sure what it is. He's a touch of the lapsy pa. Anyway, get thinking on that one. Text 0868104106. There's a lot of entertainment stories making the news today, and I will come back to a few of them. One has to do with Paul Mescal. I went to Gladiator 2 yesterday. It's not Gladiator 1. It's impossible for Paul Mescal to replicate what Russell Crowe did. I give him nothing but respect. He tried really hard. He does really well. And I won't say any more about it than that, out of kindness to a fellow Irishman. He was good. But as I say, it's hard for Gladiator 2 to come anywhere close to Gladiator 1. But I tell you one person who steals the show, Denzel Washington. Absolutely. If you're going to go and see it, you will love the show. You will love it. Denzel Washington, though, steals it. It's a bit like, and I meant to mention this yesterday. I don't know how many of you, hands up again, if you've actually watched Penguin, The Penguin with Colin Farrell. These are like 8 episodes, I think. I think there's a very good chance, and Colin Farrell says that he will do a second series of it if he's asked. If you haven't watched it, what are you waiting for? It is the most incredible television I've seen in a long, long time. At one stage over the weekend, whatever way I was Googling Rotten Tomatoes, it was giving each episode of The Penguin 100%. It's dropped back now to 95%, but that's still fine. 95% is incredible. Colin Farrell has got to get an Emmy for this. He's got to get awards for it. His performance is absolutely unreal. So if you do nothing else, I'm giving you a tip for the next few days, or indeed for the weekend. Binge watch The Penguin.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Yes, indeed. Text 0868 104 106. Let me just tell you that some listeners might find the content of the next piece distressing, and the Sexual Violence Centre is always open on a 1-800 number, 1-800-496-496. I want to talk to Olivia Kelleher, freelance journalist. She makes all of the newspapers this morning, well, most of them anyway, from court reports over the past couple of days, because the Central Criminal Court is sitting in Cork at the moment, and she joins me by WhatsApp. Olivia, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
It's just heartbreaking, actually. It's very upsetting, the content of the evidence before the courts over the past couple of days. One of them was last Friday, where we had a man before the courts for the rape and sexual assault of daughters, and again can't be named for legal reasons. And again then you're reporting from yesterday, another man before the courts in Cork, again jailed for the rape of his wife and two daughters. Would you mind if we start with last Friday, which would be
absolutely
a very, very sad story of four sisters who took to sleeping together, trying to keep them safe from their beast of a father?
Absolutely. Well, I suppose, Neil, your home is your safe place. It should be your sanctuary. And for these four girls, it was, in the words of one of them, just a house of horrors. This man, he was jailed for 17 and a half years for the rape and sexual assault of the four girls. I suppose it went on for 15 years until 2021, when his behaviour came to light and there was a Garda investigation launched. Now, I suppose one upsetting detail of the case, Neil, was that in 2012, the 14-year-old daughter made a complaint against him. A social worker came in and she told her what had gone on, and Tusla got involved. But then at home, her father put her under immense pressure to withdraw the complaint, and she overheard him telling his wife, her mother, that he'd end his life and the complaint would finish him. And the poor little girl, the teenager, felt she didn't want to cause trouble, and she withdrew the complaint.
But worse than that,
And it gets, as you say, it gets a lot worse, because then she was forced into making an apology to the man who had sexually abused her. So not only was she being raped and abused in her own home, but then to have to apologise to him. And then as a result, the abuse went on for another 9 years. So when she did apologise to her father, he turned to the mother and very callously and coldly said, "I told you, I knew it." So I suppose the details, I can't imagine what these women have gone through because these young women have gone through, because even listening to it, Neil, to be honest, at times it was hard to even process what was being said.
Can I just ask you, because you're in court, who's in court for all of this, Olivia?
Well, I suppose anyone who is not directly involved in the case is asked to leave the court to protect the anonymity of the victims, other than press and the guards and the barristers involved. Yeah. So, but the victim impact statements were just very upsetting in this case. He gave them specific instructions, sexual instructions, a couple of times a day. One of the daughters said he spied on them through keyholes of bathrooms. One of the girls said that at one stage her mother was downstairs and he went to abuse her, and she said, Mom is downstairs. And he said, well, I'll be quick. And there's no imagining somebody who would behave like that. And then he'd give the four young girls, false promises that he'd stop doing it, but he continued his behaviour. So I suppose it was just, he denied all wrongdoing when he was arrested in January of 2022, and there was supposed to be a 3-week trial, but then he pleaded guilty. So these poor girls, not only did they go through this in their home, but then you have the situation where you have the horror of thinking, well, I have to go into a witness box, go into a court, walk in front of my father and give evidence. So if he had pleaded guilty earlier, he'd have spared them all of that worry as well. So that's another form of torture that they went through.
128 counts of sexual assault, again, as you say, on a daily basis, for several years. In fact, sometimes several times a day on a daily basis for years, in the home, in the bedrooms, in the workplace, even at the home of their grandparents and their great-grandparents.
And even in his own workplace. I mean, they weren't, one of the girls said, they weren't safe anywhere.
Isn't it terribly sad that you would have four young girls sleeping together trying to protect themselves?
And Neil, the idea of they tried to pretend they were asleep, in the hope that he wouldn't go near them. And then the victim impact statements, one of them mentioned that the father would climb the steps of bunk beds. So it's just, you know, you're trying to picture any young child inside in bed. You're not even safe.
No, it's heartbreaking
in your own bed. And I suppose as well, when it's you go out into the world as an older person and you can get burnt and things can happen. But when it's a parent, they're supposed to be in this position of trust and to be there to protect you, and for the person who's supposed to protect you to be the one who subjects you to that. As Miss Justice O'Connor, the judge, said, a child shouldn't have to fear going to bed at night with footsteps creeping up. No. And it's only the other sad aspect of it as well is that for many years the sisters didn't know that he was abusing the others. So it was only, they realised in 2020 that he was abusing them all. Oh, so it's just, I suppose, trying to pick up your life after something like this occurs, and it's unimaginable.
So was it a case then on Friday that all these, they're young women now, that they actually read their impact statements to the court and he was present for it?
There had been a previous sitting of the case where I believe one of the young women read it and others were read into record. I believe, I could be wrong, but he would have just sat through it. But I suppose he didn't have any, he just sat, hard to figure what was going on in the person's head. No obvious emotion either way.
Okay. 17 and a half years then.
17
for the rape
and
sexual assault of his four daughters. Thank you for that. Almost a similar sentence then yesterday for a man jailed for the rape of his wife and his two daughters. Again, another individual, man who's 45 now, can't be named to protect the identity of his victims. And again, almost like similar amounts. In the case of Friday, we were looking at 128 counts. And yesterday was 100, and correct me if I'm wrong, 185 counts.
185 counts, but they plead guilty then to sample counts. But again, this is a man who raped his wife and two daughters. It emerged actually yesterday that his wife became very ill at one stage, and his behaviour still went on when she was really, really sick at home. Basically, it went on for 15 years. One of the young girls was raped from the age of 9 until she was 16. And the other was raped from the age of 9 until she was 11. In her victim impact statement, one of the young women said that she noticed her father's behaviour changing towards her when she made her Holy Communion, which is kind of inappropriate touching after that and escalate from there. So it's just the idea, Neil, of, you know, the Holy Communion Day, the little girl, the innocence of it all. And then for a person to look at that small child and then see them in a different light soon after, it's unimaginable. But Miss Justice Mary Ellen Ring said that this man had subjected the girls to a cold campaign of rape and sexual assault. And she said that he seemed to have no understanding of the devastating impact of his actions on the family. So I suppose, not to get into, you know, just to be kind of general, because it's very sensitive. You know, the eldest daughter said that she was preyed upon hundreds of times, and you weren't safe in your bed. It could happen when you're asleep in bed. The matter was reported in 2020, but these women, the mother and the two daughters, it was 5 years, really, I suppose, four, best part of 5 years, really, before this all got to court, which is another ordeal in itself. I suppose they left the family home in 2019, and they've had to wait until yesterday, I suppose, to...
He stayed in the marital home.
Okay. Yeah.
And, he must have been interviewed by Gardaí on a number of occasions.
He was. He was interviewed on 5 occasions, Neil, and he denied everything. And he even suggested that he might have sleepwalked into a bedroom, that he could have been sleepwalking. So it, he did eventually give a plead guilty. But what a difference it would have made, I would imagine, to those young women if he and their mother, if he pleaded guilty when he was first interviewed in 2020, they've had this hanging over
them.
They
have a lot of coercive control going on here as well, because you see somebody who says, when the wife says, "I'm leaving you," he threatens to kill himself, and he threatens, "I'll take the children." You know, very, very evil course of behaviour.
I mean, this poor woman, his wife, it was going on, she was being raped 3 or 4 times a week for years. And as you say, if she threatened to leave, he threatened to kill himself, or there'd be issues with the children. So it's a cold campaign that person callously carries out. And they were, I suppose, effectively trapped in the house. I thought there was another, it was a small kind of detail, but telling of his character, that the judge said that he weaponized one of the young girl's pets against her. That I assume she wasn't allowed to have access to her pets when they left the family home. So, I mean, this is the degree of cruelty on top of everything that you'd inflict. The man didn't have any previous convictions, and I suppose they factor in the guilty plea as kind of a mitigating factor. And he was jailed for 18 and a half years, but the final 18 months were suspended. But his ex-wife now said that, like, she lives with panic attacks. He also did another very cruel thing, that when the allegations were made against him, the court heard that he told everybody in the area of the allegations being made against him. So they didn't have the anonymity that anybody in this situation deserves. You know, that I can't imagine the feeling of everybody knowing as well.
Well, that must have been dreadful for them, but at least they can live now with the confidence that they were proven right in a court of law, and he was guilty, and he's now in jail. Thank you so much, Olivia, as
no
always.
No problem. Thanks so much, Neil. Thank you so much for taking the call.
In fact, the Central Criminal Court continues on Leaside this week, and Olivia Kelleher's back in again in about an hour's time. So it's a busy week for the Central Criminal Court sitting in Cork. The 24-hour rape crisis helpline is open, as I say, 24 hours on 1-800-77-8888, 1-800-77-8888. And the Sexual Violence Centre here in Cork is another 1-800 number, 496 496. Back after the break.
Call Neil now. 0818-104-106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Francisco, good morning to you, my friend. How are you? You're feeling the pain, I'm told. Is that right?
Yes, good morning to you too.
Oh my God.
I'm not feeling only the pain, I'm agonizing pain.
Agonizing pain. Okay. Barely walk with pain. Do you mind if I ask you to I don't know how much you remember of what happened, but it was over the jazz weekend. You were out with pals. Just tell us what you recall.
Well, it was the 27th, that was a Saturday. From the jazz weekend, I normally don't going out because I'm not a drink person or a smoke person, no drugs person. Mm. But it was a jazz weekend, and the two friends invited me to go for a drink. And I was in Vibe. Vibe is a new gay venue in Cork, in Oliver Plunkett Street.
I know it. It's Vibe. Yeah, it's on Oliver Plunkett Street. It's called Vibe. Jen runs it from Sparkle, doesn't she?
Jen.
Yeah.
Jen is very nice. She's very good of me.
Yeah.
Mine.
Yeah.
And but I have a Chihuahua, 12 years old, and I'm very attached to him because I lost my mom for the COVID 3 years ago.
Sorry to hear that.
So I got more attached to my Chihuahua, and I don't like to let him alone. So around 11 o'clock, I told to my friends, listen, I'm heading home because I don't like to leave my son alone. I call him my son. I don't care. And they told me, no, stay 5 minutes more, 15 minutes more, one drink more. It's so nice, very nice. I said, guys, no, because I will stay, but I will be worried to let him alone there.
Okay. How did you feel after those two drinks? I mean, were they cocktails or beers or what?
Yeah, it was a Sex in the Beach. This is not considered a drink. It's like a juice.
Okay.
It's more orange juice than other thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So Jen and the head security guy take a look on the CCTV from the Vibe. Mm. And they told me, Francisco, you was perfect fine during the time you are in the club. Even when you're going out to go home, you say goodbye to everyone because I know everybody there. You say goodbye to everyone, you kiss everybody, and then it's just, I never walk home. I always grab a taxi because it's a taxi stop in front of Olive Blanc Street in Grand Parade.
Yes, there is.
That's the last thing I remember, getting in the corner. Then I wake up in the COH.
Oh, my God. So when you awoke in the COH, what kind of time had passed? Was it hours later?
No, 11 o'clock.
No, when you woke up in the COH?
Oh, when I wake up, maybe it was 3 or 4 o'clock.
Okay. And were you in pain then? Was there medics there treating you? Did they tell you about your injuries? What happened?
Agonizing pain, but they took an X-ray, and then I couldn't bear the pain. Next day, back to the emergency. They gave me some kind of medication, a bit stronger medication. I come back. Next day, two doctors came with an ambulance. Explain me what's happening, because it's pain even for walk. My shoulder is broken in three pieces.
Oh my God.
And they told, I had been told by three doctors, you need a surgery immediately. But then it's a young, and I'm not going to mention names because it's not ethical. It was a young Irish doctor say, oh no, I'm just turning out 60. I don't look 60, I look 40, because I'm kind of a guy, I don't smoke, I don't drink, and I'm kind of sportive and everything.
Yeah, I know, you're right. I've seen a photograph of you, and you look about 35. So you look after yourself.
Yes.
Well done. Yeah. But
yes.
What is that? But they told you that you'd broken your shoulder. Somebody broke your shoulder, and that you nearly lost your right eye, is it?
Yes.
Okay.
Almost.
So were they able to say whether you were attacked, or did they take bloods to see if your cocktail had been spiked? Do you know what spiking is?
They took bloods, but I don't understand. And I took to my GP. The GP says they didn't check if there was drugs or anything like that.
That's they unfortunate. That is very unfortunate to see if your drink had been spiked, because somebody could have spiked your drink and you could have literally fallen down. Did they say that it could have happened in a fall, or are they able to say that you were attacked?
Well, the paramedics say I fall intoxicated, but the security people that I know, even my GP and the doctor, the real consultant says this is not an injury from fall. If you fell from injuries from face down, the first thing you're gonna broken is your nose. It's not your eyes.
Yeah.
And you're gonna have some injuries in your hands and your legs and etc. And you have only a very bad injury in your right eyes. This is like a push to knock you down.
Okay.
And you broke your shoulders when you when you fell down.
And were you robbed? Was there anything taken from you? Do you recall?
No. No, I was with my iPhone Pro Max. I just gave to me because my birthday was 18 October. Gave me my present and my money and my credit card was there. They just doing as a target. I was in the wrong time in a wrong place.
And why do you think that was? Has it any bearing with the fact that you came out of a gay club? Do you think, is it a homophobic attack if it was an attack?
On the first instance, I told it will be, but I'm not walking like a gay guy. Mm-hmm. I'm not dressed as a gay guy. And I'm a very normal guy. And I don't think in first instance, yes, I told you could be homophobic. But now I don't believe it's homophobic anymore.
Do you think that violence is on the rise in Cork? Do you think that it's becoming extremely unsafe to be in the city?
I don't think, I'm sure. I've been living here 22 years. I'm an Irish citizen.
Yeah, you came from Italy a long time ago. This is home. So you believe that it is, as time went by, it's become more and more unsafe?
Much, much more. Even the guards have visited me 2 times already in my place. And they told me, Francisco, don't go out anymore alone. Make sure you walk out with a friend. It is still dangerous. And when you come back, make sure the taxi will pick up you in the front of the club or the pub you are. I never walk back home on my foot. I always grab a taxi. But it gets very, very dangerous.
No, it gets
and
so angry when I hear
Thursday,
that.
I have to go to the, because he's a gentleman who look into the case. So far, he got only the CCTV. This is almost 1 month now. And he got the CCTV only from the club. And I don't know if I will prosecute them because I feel scared for retaliation, you know?
Well,
I am scared now even to go to the doctor, even to go to buy my groceries. I can't buy. I'm surviving on milk because I can't cook with the left hand. And I don't have money enough because I am an invalid pension. I have 6 screws in my back. I have been operated 12 years ago, and they retired me because I can't sit for a long time.
Okay, you had back surgery that you had to retire afterwards. You were told in the CUH that you should have surgery, and that your shoulder was broken in 3 places. So why aren't they doing the surgery? Do they have to wait for swelling to go down?
Yes, well, they did it, the swelling going down, but I couldn't cope, stay at home because I'm agonizing pain. So I was back there 4 times in emergency, and the last time the manager, it was a lady from the emergency department, came to me with a prescription for Sopadol and said, the consultant says this is a case for surgery. But we needed to wait a little bit. And then, last Friday, I received a call from the CUH asking me to going back there tomorrow again. So today with my GP, I asked them, I don't understand, because if it's something for physiotherapy or something for treatment, they don't ring you. They actually send you a letter. Mm. Why am I going to do that tomorrow again? I don't understand. Is this good for me even for a walk?
I don't know what will happen tomorrow as to whether they will do surgery or whether they will allow the shoulder to heal naturally. I don't know. You're going to have to wait and see what happens tomorrow. It would be good to get this, to get more CCTV to see if you were spiked or whether or not you were attacked, because you clearly weren't drunk. So it's one or the other. Either you were attacked or you were spiked.
Yeah.
Will you stay in touch and let me know if you have any updates?
I will. I will. Thank you so much. And please spread this word, because people need to be aware that cork gets very, very dangerous.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we know it, pal. We know it. Talk soon. Look after yourself. Best of luck.
Thank you so much for your calling.
Bye-bye.
Very positive. Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Of course, we played some lovely audio and some very funny audio to remember and pay tribute to the late John Kenny. When John Kenny was starting off as a stage comedian back in the early 80s, Neil, he did a few gigs on Lee Side at DeLacy House. I was in a band called Short Circuit, a new wave band doing synth pop covers. Actually, you know what? This is a text from the Loungeman, Connor the Loungeman. I remember that band. I remember the name of the band, Short Circuit, from back then. But anyway, Connor says, we were his support act in DeLacy House. We were only in our teens, but we were delighted with the support gigs. He was a complete gentleman, always complimented our set. I remember the first night he did his gig, he was just a ball of nerves backstage. And then he said, "Here goes, nothing, lads." And jumped into the spotlight. And man, he hit that stage and he hit it hard and he never held back. He was a ball of energy and had the audience in hysterics. RIP to John Kenny, says the Loungeman. Thank you for that, Loungeman. Hope to see you this side of Christmas. Come in and play a few tunes. I got on the train from Dublin with three colleagues after our Christmas party, heading home to Cork, feeling very sorry for ourselves. Then John Kenny and Pat Short got on the train and sat with us. We had the carriage to ourselves. They had a gig in Dublin the night before and obviously hadn't seen each other since, and both had a good night out. Well, when I got off the train, I couldn't talk. My jaw was sore from laughing. It was the best and the funniest crack I ever had in my life. 3 hours of stories and jokes and private conversations with Dunbelievables. A fantastic memory. Lucky, lucky you. You got a private show, and that sounds like fun. One of my favourite John Kenny parts is when he played the Eurovision MC in Father Ted. Shave a bullock. You know what? I must, at some stage in my life, sit down and watch at least one episode of Father Ted. I know. At one point, John Kenny caught the biggest wild brown trout on record in Ireland. Did you know that? I don't know if this record still stands today. He'll be sadly missed, says Jamie. I did not know that, and I wish I'd known that when I was talking to him over the years, but thank you for it nonetheless. So text 0868104106. A lot to get through this morning, but boy, we are having an absolute roiler of a time with this competition with Standard Life. Standard Life Pensions have given me a €350 one-for-all voucher to give away every day this week, but on Friday, it's a €600 voucher for the Blue Book. And that means in that Blue Book, there are some fantastic destinations where you can stay. Luxurious destinations, hotels, guest houses, B&Bs and things like that. Top end luxury stuff. So on Friday, it's a €600 voucher. But today, tomorrow and in the Thursday, it's a €351 for all voucher you can spend on anything. We want to hear what your second life plans would be. Let's just say you could retire. Or let's just say you've got enough, or you've got a standard life pension and it's got enough in it to allow you to quit work. What would you do? Where would you go? How would you spend that time? Because again, and Standard Life will tell you that retirement isn't the end of something, it's the beginning of something new. So I've been encouraging you to let us know what you would do if you were in a position just to call it a day. Bernice says, I'm blessed to be involved in looking after my grandchildren as their parents work. There is no job more rewarding than being privileged to be a part in their wonderful lives. Bernice, did you hear me last week talking about the woman in the Daily Telegraph who charges her sons and daughters to mind the grandchildren? Did you hear that? She puts a price on everything, including her time. I'm wondering whether you ever consider something like that. Caroline says, I would help those who are going through cancer and their families. I've lost both my grandparents to cancer in the last 12 months, 6 months apart from each other. I've seen the impact it has, and I'd love to help out with the extra time that I'd been given. Margot says, I would live in the meadows, surrounded by flowers and trees and birds and bees and fresh air and peace and enjoy nature. I'd slip away bit by bit, and I'd live like the monks. It would be great for the soul and for your health. Can I just say, they lived cold, old lives, those monks, whether it was in an abbey or a friary or wherever it was. It was damn cold, I can tell you. They made honey and they made beer and they made wine and they said prayers and all that kind of thing. I don't know, could you deal with the coldness? I'm reading actually the Cadfael omnibuses at the moment. It's like 7 books of Cadfael, the big thick things, and each of them there are 3 Cadfael stories. And they had tough lives back then. I mean, they were all dead by 50, if they were even lucky at 50. I'd love to move to Connemara, buy a little cottage overlooking the sea, have a couple of acres and some animals, and that would be a dream for me. Now you're talking. Isn't Connemara the most beautiful place? Kate says, I'd open a retirement home or a hospice for senior dogs that need rehoming. I'd have to divorce my husband, I suppose. First, though, we wouldn't be on the, because we just wouldn't be on the same page. Yeah, him and me both. A retirement home for dogs. Don't count me in on that one, says he. First, I would buy a property in Puerto Rico, Neil, says Roy, for me and my family to use whenever they like. Then I would continue to work here for a few months of the year and get a little airport transfer job in Puerto Rico when I'm there, and travel back and forth whenever it suits. Sometimes dreams may come true. Well, the power of positive thinking, my friend. And just one more for now. Well, just these two. Sandra says, I have just retired and I'm loving it. I have grandkids that keep me busy and friends to meet with coffee and lunch. Doing a course that will keep me busy till May, and also free to give more time to the organizations I've been volunteering with for the past 12 years. I still haven't got around to spring cleaning the house, though, but sure, you have to prioritize, don't you? I'm just waiting, because soon they will roll on for me the free travel. Yep, and then you'll be off exploring. And Maria says, retire early, spend time with your loved ones, see the world. My dad was due to retire, Neil, in the middle of next year, but was diagnosed with leukemia at the start of November and is now fighting this horrible battle with my mum by his side, who also has now given up work for the foreseeable future to care for him. Don't wait until you're forced to retire. It's all about getting the timing right, isn't it? That is awfully sad. Your dad due next year, and of course now fighting a very serious health issue. I suppose it just goes to show, like, what do they say when we make plans and God starts laughing, because God's got other plans, isn't it true? Text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106. As we talk about men this morning, or indeed don't, believe it or not, today is International Men's Day. I have to say, if it was International Women's Day, we would be wall-to-wall advertising, wall-to-wall newspaper columns and articles on it, wall-to-wall magazines talking about International Women's Day. Don't get me wrong, I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't be, but it just seems to be so one-sided when it comes to either International Women's Day, huge amounts of press and talk, International Men's Day, not a kick and a stampede. It's kind of sad, really, isn't it? Text 0868104106.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Okay, we'll have to wait and see what happens with Francisco when he goes back to hospital, see if there's an operation. One of the things that's disturbing is, because we're heading into the holiday season, and we're heading into, I hate that term, Christmas season, I should say. We're also heading into party season when people will be out and about. You need to be on your guard. I was telling you that, there's an alert out there that there is a peak at the moment. Has it ever not been a peak? We've heard this for the last few years, and STDs, sexually transmitted diseases, and it could go wreck over the Christmas time if you're not watching who you're partnering up with, or if you're not minding the amount of drink you're consuming. On top of all of that, then, we were talking with Francisco, and I'm wondering, was he spiked? And I only asked that question because I've asked it on many occasions in the past, and I have to tell you that senior medics and some medics involved in emergency services have told me in the past that spiking is actually a misnomer. They don't test for spiking, so I don't know how they can say that, but they're on the front line, so I bow and I respect their opinions, and they say things like, people are on all sorts of different substances themselves, it's not about drinks being spiked, but yet we hear of date rape drinks all of the time and people having their drinks spiked and being told to mind your drinks and things like that. So I don't really know. I don't really know. And we will never know unless people are tested for it constantly, don't you think? Anyway, text 0868104106. We talk about boys. We talk about them growing into men. And today being International Men's Day, men find it difficult to communicate. I often wonder, is it in the raising? Or is it just our emotions are different to the emotions of women? Is it a DNA thing? Or are we just built differently to women and girls? And it has nothing to do as to how you're raised as a child. People say, and I see texts saying, of two girls and four boys, the saying is so true. The girls would test the patience of a saint, whereas the lads are easy to plumb off. And the lads have the place wrecked, all right. Well, I mean, you know, how can... It seems to me as if they're all testing the patience of a saint in that one, because... you're talking about the girls being testing the patience of a saint and the boys wrecking the house. You've a lot going on. I have two boys and two girls. The eldest is 26. Next is a boy of 23, then a boy of 14, a girl of 13. I think it was easier to rear the older two. It doesn't matter what the gender is. It's just different eras. That's so true. Could you imagine now rearing a child now with all of the challenges that are out there? Long time, and then you wonder about the rearing of boys and hoping that they don't turn into, you know, beasts or nasty people or hurtful people. Or we have this term now called toxic masculinity, of course, where men, unfortunately, some of them are very disrespectful and they regard women as being nothing more than a commodity. Have a listen to this one, though. I'm a long time listener to your show. And I know you spoke about this recently. It's taken me a good while to muster up the strength to even write this email. I'm a single mother in my late 30s. It's just me and my baby, who turns 18 in a few months. In the past year and a half, I've seen a big change in him, and it's not for the best. He's become very aggressive. He's called me names that I couldn't even repeat. I've been pinned to the wall on a few occasions when he comes in looking for money for drink. He has never hit me. I haven't reported it to the Gardaí. After all, he is my baby. Neither do I want to kick him out of the house. It would kill me to think he was slipping into the city in this cold. It would kill me to think he was slipping in the city in this cold. I'm not quite sure what that means. I think that means should be sleeping. I don't know what that means. I don't know what to do or where to turn to, but I know this cannot continue. He doesn't have ADHD or anything like that, because he's been tested for all of that, but I am certainly very worried. And so you should be, because that's only going to get worse unless you do something about it. He's 18 years of age, seen big changes, become very aggressive, called your names. He's pinned you to the wall on a few occasions. There is nothing different to pinning somebody in the wall and hitting them. You say that he hasn't hit you. Well, he has, actually. Pinning you to the wall is the same thing. And he's looking for money for drink. He's only going to get worse. This guy is in trouble. He needs some kind of intervention. I don't know whether there's any anybody in your family that you can fight with, that can sit down and have a chat with him. Wouldn't be an awful bad idea if the Gardaí were called. Might put manners on him. Next time it happens, just call on Garda Síochána. Let them give him a good stern warning. It might make a difference. But sitting on this and doing nothing, bad idea. It'll just go from bad to worse. Text 0868104106. Agnes, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
I don't know if you have a thought on that. You don't have to give any advice, but I just see if you want to jump in on that one.
Well, I suppose a lot of it really is sitting down with the child. Now, that may not happen in this case, as from the point of view of she may find it difficult to communicate with him, with his behaviour at the moment. But in my circumstances, where I have two boys, I would be in constant communication with them if they were sort of on boisterous, or if they weren't, as I say, towing the line for me.
Yeah, he's 18 though. He's a grown man. He's a very angry young man for whatever reason. And again, you got to wonder what he's consuming, you know, other friends or people he hangs out with, what he's seeing online, to treat his mother like this, you know?
Yeah, it's an awful situation to be in, and I empathise with the lady, of course, but I would suggest that perhaps she would sit down with him, and when he's in good form, and just have it out with him, basically, and ask him what is wrong in his life, ask him where she could enhance his life better, and that would be my suggestion to her.
How can she see that being pinned to the wall is the same as being hit? I mean, or maybe she sees it that way because she loves her son and is in denial. He's pinning her to the wall.
Oh yeah, that's very serious, really, and I would consider that not normal behaviour for her son. Now, I reckon there's a lot of hormones going on. He's trying to find his way in life. He's trying to sort of make up his mind about his, you know, life going forward. And I know that there's probably a lack of a male in his life as well. Now, I had that myself. But I would...
Thank you. Thank you for broaching the subject. Tell me, you lost your beautiful husband to cancer 20 years ago. You had small children at the time.
Yes, my husband was diagnosed with terminal cancer when I was 34 weeks pregnant with our second child. And you can imagine our whole world came crumbling down. And it was a terminal diagnosis. And unfortunately, only he lived 5 months. Now, the baby was born in between. He was diagnosed in May. The baby was born on the 15th of July, and he died on the 3rd of November. So you can imagine it was a mix of emotions, new baby being born, knowing that your husband was going to die. And we also had a toddler at the time as well, our oldest son.
Oh, my God. I have no idea how you coped. Oh, my God. With the loss and with the rearing on your own.
Yeah, it was a completely bittersweet, Neil. Now, we were in the same hospital when he was very ill in the Bon Secours. So I was in the maternity side and he was in the general side. So it was a very poignant moment when the baby came into the world. He was brought in a wheelchair by a lovely nurse called Mary from the other side of the Bon Secours. And he arrived in the room just as the baby was about to come into the world.
And was he very sick at that stage?
He was, yes. He was very, very, very ill, yes. So
that is tragic.
Very tragic, yes. So he held the baby and...
David, wasn't it, David?
That's right, yes, yeah. And he said, I'll never see you grow up. I'll never be able to bring you to the circus and do the nice things in life. And he was a super dad to our first son. You know, it's a moment I will never forget in my life, is listening to those words. However, life went on and he was very ill. So he died at Marymount on the 3rd of November. And I must actually say Marymount was an excellent place for us all. We got great attention and care there from the staff, got great counselling, and they prepared us for his death.
And David was 16 weeks old when his dad died. And your older son, Aaron, was about 2.5 years old.
2.5 years old, that's correct, yes. So then, when the funeral was over, it was the task of just sitting down, having a chat with myself, and saying, I need to get these boys reared, and rear them correctly, to the best of my ability. So thankfully, David's now 20, and Aaron is 22. They're both in college, and... they've turned out fine, really. But, you know, it was rocky along the way. There was a rocky road. However, I just always...
What was rocky? Was it boundaries? Was it their hormones? Was it trying to deal with their growing up and their moods or what, as boys?
Deal with their growing up, yes, and their moods, yes. But I always made sure I communicated with them. I was very much involved with their education and I would always ask questions. And if I saw them sort of... slipping in some area, I would be down on top of them. So I used to get them together in our conservatory of an evening time and I'd sit down and chat with them, just general chit chat first, and then I would try and establish if there was any problems during the day in school or if they were feeling a little bit left out in life because they had no dad. So I suppose the hardest part I found about rearing them was sports. I'm not really a sporty person, so I used to kind of empathise with them a lot when we would go to the GA pitch or whatever. Now, there was very nice men there and everything, but I remember one evening they came off the pitch and they said, Mom, we would love if our dad was on the pitch. And they were crying. And I suppose that got to me as well. Yeah. But on the other hand, you know, they've turned out to two nice boys and I can't but say that they're happy boys and that's how life went for us.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of this conversation we had over the last week or so had to do with the term called toxic masculinity. You aware of that, or what is your understanding of that?
Well, basically, I suppose it's boys being reared, and not saying in every home, but boys being reared in a toxic environment. I guess their exposure to social media may be toxic. They may have toxic relationships with family, with their peers, I'm not sure. But that would be my take on that.
Mm-hmm. You know, it also has to do with violence against women, sexual entitlement against women, you know, dealing with women as if they're some kind of a commodity or the weaker sex or they're to be controlled. That's another one. And again, this question is being asked, has this to do with, you know, nature or nurture? Is it testosterone gone wrong? Is it the aggressive nature of men coming from social media or groups of other men? Pornography is a huge issue in it. The jails are full of men, and one has to wonder why are 90% of our jails full of men and so few women. Sexual assaults, while they're not unheard of in women, or rape or aggression like that. We heard of court reports this morning of men raping their children. It's men. I wonder why that is.
Correct. I just wonder, is it too much exposure to these Xboxes while they're growing up, or in these PlayStations? What's being taught to kids through that? You know, they're constantly taken up with these mechanical devices on a TV, and are they learning from that? I'm not sure. Now, where my sons are concerned, I always brought them up to respect everybody and to make sure women were respected, and, you know, never to make sure that they respected women in a way that they wouldn't be calling them names or... Just have total respect for women, really, and they have two girlfriends, and they respect them, so I can't say any more than that in my situation.
Okay.
But I know it exists out there. Yeah.
Okay, well said, and thank you for it, Agnes. You've done a great job for your two lads. You should be very proud of them. Text 0868 104 106. Calls on the way.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation. The Neil Prendeville Show with Dwyer's Electrical, Forge Hill. 89% of the prison population is male. 80% of people who take their own lives in this country are men. The greater perpetrators of domestic violence, sexual assault and rape, men. I also made the point last week that more and more divorces and separations are instigated by women against men. I don't mean to be... I'm not loading it on men. I'm just trying to wonder, why is this the case? I made a statement which was a statistical statement last week. It wasn't an opinion. It was a statistical statement last week, which was saying that unfortunately, all too often, men that are in jail come from single family homes. And some people found that, well, one person here, for instance, Mary says, that is a disgusting statement. I reared three boys and one girl as a single mum because their father died when the eldest was 11. They're now in their 50s, late 40s, all professional careers, thank goodness. I never remarried because I had to go back to work and rear the four of them. I never had a problem because they were loved, and to this day their respect for me is absolutely wonderful. I don't deny it for a moment. I was just giving you statistics that actually can be stood over when you look at who's in jail. And I'm not saying that's the only reason why, but I was making the point, or at least trying to make the point, that maybe there needs to be the influence of a father in lives. I mean, sadly, if it's a tragic death of a father, I understand that. You're talking about statistics about more men in prison than women. Why not say that the statistics about how many men or boys are in prison that came from broken families having only one parent? The statistics on that are shocking. Maybe that's how we start changing things. Thank you kindly. That was the point I was trying to make without trying to, you know, upset people making the statement that that texter's just made there, the amount of men and boys in prison from broken families. Boys usually fight over territory. Girls usually fight over jealousy. If boys do not learn to defend early, they are doomed when they reach adulthood. Many parents are spoiling them and telling them that everything they do is some bit dangerous, and this later affects their mental health, especially if they cannot escape where they live. Boys toughen up. It's the same as girls becoming beautiful. Boys need to toughen while girls become beautiful. A large percentage of men in prison are state failures and growing up without one parent. There's a lot to unpack there. Again, the statistic about men in prison from one-parent families. But I'd be rather disturbed that you would think that it is right that men are told to be tough. It's your job to be tough, and it's a woman's job to be beautiful. Again, that can lead to issues with regards to toxic masculinity as to how to mend them when they grow up, or indeed not even grow up. Young boys can be very negative and very derogatory to young girls. So keep those coming. Text 0868 104 106. I have to wonder whether or not it's the ability to communicate, whether boys then grow up to be men who cannot communicate and cannot be open. Remember, we were talking last week about how men always feel as if they have to be having a laugh or a joke or having the crack or winding each other up, but would find it impossible to have a really serious conversation about how they actually feel. Has some of that got to do with sons maybe being spoiled by their mothers? And it's even encouraged in childhood that you're reared with that you need to be tough and you need to be strong, you need to be good at sport, you need to be masculine. That's changing now? For sure it is. But there's generations where it wasn't that way, where toys had to be a certain type, books you read had to be a certain type, type of clothing you had to wear had to be a certain type. You had to be tough and, you know, don't be a sissy, man up, terms like that. Back to the phone lines we go. Paul Gallagher joins me by phone. Paul, good morning.
Morning, Neil.
I've unpacked an awful lot there, and you've been through it and have made huge changes in your life to be able to communicate better. What do you think about where we're at now, or what the issues have just brought up?
I think there's an awful lot of things to discuss there, and there's no one fell swoop statement that would cover it adequately or sensitively enough. I came from a single home, Neil, myself, and grew up, and mum was very good, and our family was split up, and all sorts of stuff, which I won't go into too much detail, mm-hmm. but I think nowadays, kindness is a strength that's very underrated, right? And I think men can be strong and be kind. And I think it's, you know, this thing about toughen up. I grew up in this thing when you went out on the soccer pitch and, like, if your leg was hanging off, you'd still be told to go back on the field, you know? And it was kind of toughen up, right? But that was very hard. And, I mean, a lot of men turn to drink and a lot of men turn to whatever. The Irish male was very poor at conversing anything personal until very recently, Neil, you know. The understanding that you would show vulnerability or weakness was almost unheard of, right? And, we were all supposed to be, you know, but just tough and strong and whatever. Whereas, like, nowadays, I mean, resilience is something that needs to be taught, I should say. And also, in schools, there seems to be very little conflict resolution networking, right? So,
are you talking about issues, say, because I found the whole area of bullying in schools very, very, very vague and very foggy. It's not dealt with,
yes,
is it?
Yes, very vague and very foggy and not dealt with. And a lot of it's swept under the counter or under the carpet. And a lot of it's kind of, you know, semi-ignored still to this day. But, like, conflict resolution, teaching kids how to resolve conflicts without boxing the head off each other or without being aggressive or, you know. I mean, the resort, if you look at all the, like, the movies and the Xbox and all this, the resort violence is the first sort of resource. Whereas in real life, it should be compassion and understanding. Because, I mean, you could have a guy screaming at you, Neil, but, like, you don't know what abuse he had before he left the house that morning.
Mm.
Or a girl, right? Mm. You don't know where they came from. You don't know where their head is at.
Mm.
And, you know, you don't, like, hurting people hurt. People who are hurt tend to hurt other people.
Mm. Mm. Mm.
Right? And we need to find the source of the hurt and help them, show compassion. And at the same time, like,
Here's the problem with that, though, because you will hear that all of the time in the courts in mitigating circumstances for sentencing.
I'm just going to come to that now, right? I'm in the retail business meeting, and the theft, and I'm actually on a news talk special tomorrow about theft and the increase in theft, particularly over the last few years, right? And it is now, we have two stores in the inner city, Dublin, Connell Street and Grafton Street.
Let me just say that Paul Gallagher is the franchise for Skechers in Ireland. Go ahead, yeah.
Right. Okay, so we have a Skechers and an Attic store in O'Connell Street and Henley Street. And every day for the first 5 days last week, we were robbed in each store. Every day.
Wow.
Right? And the guards, there's not enough Gardaí, and the Gardaí that are there are sometimes will confide in you that they're feeling powerless. They arrest Johnny or Tommy or whoever it may be, and he's back out in 2 days later sticking the two fingers up at the guard and calling them names.
Yeah.
Justice system isn't fit for purpose. There is no consequence for antisocial behaviour and petty crime or, well, shoplifting and all this type of stuff. We need a zero tolerance approach here. And I think we need to get, you know, set the boundaries, what's acceptable and what's not acceptable.
Well, what if that's the rearing, though? What if that's all in the rearing, that it's actually in the nurturing? as opposed to the nature.
Yeah, I mean, I get that too, but I mean, I think it's a combination. If you could get some like conflict resolution in schools, get some, you know, like it, making it more obvious that there's consequences for what you do. And I mean,
not if they're underage though.
But there has to be consequences for all ages. I mean, they can't just run amok, you know, and that's what's happening now, right? And we're seeing them coming in, they're pushing staff, they're spitting at staff, they're grabbing bunches of jumpers or bunches of sweatshirts off the rail and running out the door. They don't give a damn. They absolutely don't care.
Do you have security on those doors?
No. I can have security there 7 days a week.
And do you find the same crowd coming back time after time knowing that there's never going to be a consequence?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we had one there in a coffee shop. A guy was headbutted on O'Connell Street. Then there was another one on Henry Street. The woman was arrested for stealing a whole load of chocolates in 27 previous convictions.
God almighty.
No, that's frustrating, Neil. I mean, you know, SMEs are fighting all sorts of things at the moment, but like, you know, that's a tough one, you know.
Do you find that it's more boys or more men or female are doing the robbing and the spitting and the fighting and the pushing?
It's male dominated. I don't know what the split is, Neil, but it is male dominated. Okay. But there are plenty of women involved in it as well, and sometimes they work in groups.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's shocking. I don't get me wrong. I'm not moving away from that. But I'm just looking at other aspects of, say, young people's lives where they're gaming. You know now that pornography clearly is very, very available to all sorts of age groups, so much so now that we have 11 and 12-year-olds and 13-year-olds who are actively engaging in sex. So it's absolutely the Wild West out there. And they also say that in the world of gaming, it just drives young fellas crazy. They get completely wired up in that online world, and then they carry it into the real world. Do you know what I mean?
That's above my pay grade, Neil, but it could well be, and I can see where you're coming from.
But you see with pornography that it would lead to men or young men having a very negative image of women.
It could possibly be, and maybe the lawmakers could look at it. I don't know, it's very difficult to restrict access to that. I suppose that's a parental thing as much as anything else. But, you know, look, there's a whole lot of stuff that needs to be fixed. But as it is at the moment, there seems to be a lawlessness out there, Neil, particularly in the last 3 to 5 years, that wasn't there heretofore. And whether you put it down to drugs or whether you put it down to upbringing, whether you put it down to no consequences, but it certainly needs to be dealt with, right?
Okay.
And I think the government could deal with COVID quite rapidly when, and I think they did a reasonably decent job, to be fair. But this needs the same sense of urgency. But, I mean, there was a comment put, I think, towards the Minister McAtee last week, and she said, oh, we're well aware of all this. And then the guy asked her, well, why aren't you doing something about it? And there was no response.
Mm. Criminality, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's affecting business so much, though, that you have to write off X amount of profit per year to set aside for it. Is that the case?
Yeah, and I mean, we also have to have full-time security staff, which are expensive because they're hired in externally and so on, you know. And but the other thing is, you have staff now, and this is starting to creep in since the riots. The attic store on O'Connell Street was one of the ones that was looted, right? Last year, we were torn apart on that Friday, and the staff were afraid, particularly Asian staff and non-nationals, were afraid to come into work for quite a few days afterwards. I think, Neil, as an Irishman, and you're a fellow Irishman as well, I was a bit disappointed to be Irish those few days now, to be honest. It felt poorly that people couldn't come in. They were afraid to go into their place of work on a Wednesday morning.
Was the place absolutely trashed, it was?
Well, ripped and stripped, yeah. Ours was absolutely ripped and stripped away, and they took a gazillion, like tens of thousands of stuff. But I was in London that night that it happened. I flew back early. I was at a conference, flew back early the following morning, myself and my business partner, and we said to the lads, these fellas aren't going to beat us. We're going to be open within a week. And we rang ASICS in headquarters in Amsterdam, and they said, how can that be possible? I said, lads, you help us, we help you, and we get open in a week, and we're open the following Friday.
Wow, well done. Listen...
I decided, Neil, that you can't bow to these fellas. Like, it's dangerous to stand up to them. But, you know, I think the average Irish fella, you know, needs to be respected for what they do, and they need to have the right to
stop. Totally. Listen, that was just an example of people. Look at the ones that came into Dublin. Look at the ones that came into Riot. They were in looking for footwear and for tracksuits and all sorts of casual gear. That's all it was on their mind.
They took single shoes off display. Like tens and dozens of single shoes, they took, put them into a bag. What are they going to sell them to, the one-legged man? I mean, Jesus Christ, what's going on?
Tell me, today is International Men's Day. This just sums it all up for me. But nobody talks about this day. But when it's International Women's Day, I'm not being sexist or anti-women or anything. Mm-hmm. But it's everywhere. We're bombarded with it. But why is it so? Why is there so much of an imbalance, or almost like a negative bias against men?
Well, I can tell you, I have a group of friends, and there's anything up to 12 or 15 of us. Every Sunday morning, Black Rock Pier at 11:30, we meet for coffee. And the group is called Lads with Issues, because we all have issues.
I'm sorry I'm laughing at that, but it's an interesting name for a group. Why?
Lads with Issues, that's what we call it, because we all have issues. And we do all have issues, but it's a great place to talk. Now, sometimes we talk absolute nonsense, Neil, and sometimes we talk about Ireland winning or losing, or we talk about Cork or Munster or two flies going up a wall, but anything and anything can be talked about. And a fella needs a shoulder to lean on. They might take another guy aside and say, come here, can you help me in talking about this? And a lot of good stuff is sorted there over a cup of coffee and a load of nonsense. And
but because men should not just have to talk about soccer or sport or work.
No. We talk about family stuff. We talk about lots of stuff. We talk about issues and talk of one of the lads, his mum is in a home with Doughton, Mary Mountain, and so on and so forth. And we talk about lots of different things, and it's very healthy. And everyone leaves that place, to the best of my knowledge, almost always with a smile on their face.
Do men talk as much about relationships breakdowns as I'm imagining and suspect that women talk with other women about breakdowns in relationships or going through divorce and separation? Do men?
I don't know how much women talk, to be honest, but I'd say men are getting better at talking anyway, in my opinion, for sure.
Why are they getting better? Why?
I think it's a confidence thing. I mean, it's like, it's okay now, like one of the adages there about it's okay not to be okay, I think is very interesting, right? Because in your day growing up, or my day, whatever, growing up, it wasn't okay not to be okay.
No one had the conversation.
And to be vulnerable was to be weak, and you were, I don't know, you might have been called a sissy, or you'd have been name called or whatever, or to show any sort of emotion was seen as... there was something missing. You weren't the full shilling.
So
you know,
could we be growing young, vulnerable men who become angry, disenfranchised, toxic, aggressive, anti-women, because they're not being told to express their emotions when they're younger?
Jesus, Neil, I don't know. I wouldn't be qualified to comment, but I do think that was a fairly heavy question. Okay. But I do think we need to be conscious of how we deal with young men, and I do think, like, the young men of today, there's tremendous pressure on them. They have to be strong, they have to be well, they have to be this, they have to be that. They're expected to be near perfect in all sorts of ways. There's huge amounts of pressure on them, And I think we need to tell them, like, that some days you're just having a great day and you just have to put one foot in front of the other. And today is only 24 hours long, the same as yesterday wasn't the same as tomorrow was. And you've just got to kick on with that and try and keep a positive mental attitude at all times. I mean, you know, I was reading something there with this guy Drucker, who's a huge business guru. And he said, like, people who can only concentrate on people's weaknesses should never be in a managerial position. Mm. You need to concentrate on people's strengths. Mm. And I think all of our young lads have strengths. We need to figure out what their strengths are and encourage them to move on.
And so for men then, who are struggling, and this being International Men's Day, who can't communicate, who feel alone or are depressed or down or feel as if life's just been unfair, it's not about turning to alcohol or going to drown your sorrows in the pub, because that just makes things worse, right?
Well, alcohol is a depressant, you know, and I mean, alcohol is nobody's friend. I mean, I was out there, you know, a couple of pints at the weekend there, and it was grand, but for the most part, I don't drink during the week. And alcohol is nobody's friend, right? And while it's a temporary high, there's the aftermath is strong. And I mean, it's absolutely acknowledged as a depressant. So reaching for drink is only a short
term. So what do you do? You climb mountains, don't you? You do Himalayas, Everest, all sorts of crazy stuff like that?
Yeah, I just back from climbing Mount Toubkal, the highest mountain in North Africa, and I climbed Mount Kenya last year, the highest mountain, second highest mountain in Africa. But, like, I go to the gym a good few times a week, but, like, one of the guys I train with a guy in Cork. I'm in Dublin at the moment, but I a few days a week, but I train with a guy in Cork, Colin O'Shaughnessy. I think he just won his 14th world title in kickboxing, and Colin's in his 50s now, and he's a very strong, formidable, scary guy. But he's got an incredible soft centre. He's a strength and conditioning coach, and he works with people in wheelchairs and these people in the exoskeletons, getting them back to work again. And I've seen him work with kids. The tenderness and the gentle touch that this man, who's a scary monster, has, is incredible.
I think I've seen some of his stuff on Insta. Yeah. So what did you do before you kind of started all this exercise?
Well, I've always been into fitness, Neil. I just say over the past 5 years since COVID, I just got more and more into it. I just happened to have more time on my hands, and I find it that, you know, any time you go in and go, you've never feel poorly coming out of a gym or going for a walk. Now, walking is completely underestimated. I did a lot of walking in COVID, and it's very good for your mental health. It's very good for your physical body too. And people say, I'm a runner. That's grand. Running is good too. But walking is very, very good for you, both physically and mentally. And it is really good to get you out and about and out of a grey day.
Even on a grey day.
Even on a grey day, you know what I mean? It doesn't matter. Forget about the weather. Like, you know, we all have gear and whatever, and you can dry it up on the hot press. Doesn't matter. But, like, to get out and to walk down the marina, any of the places in Cork, there's loads of fantastic walks in Cork now. You have the Estuary Walk, you've down the marina, you have the Mardyke, and you have the whole Blarney Walk, and God knows wherever else. And people are using them in spades, and I think I'd encourage it more. Right through the winter, if you're not feeling great, there's nothing more refreshing than going out for a walk and come back every couple
of days. Fair play. You're very positive. I'm going to let you clip on, but one last remark, though, I want to make to you. Is it okay if anybody listening to this rocks down to down to Black Rock on a Sunday morning? Is that all right if their man just wants to come down and chat?
I better ask the rest of the lads. I'm only a member of many, but I don't think they'd be turned away, but
So. All right. Okay. Well, watch this space. Let me know how that works out and if it's okay.
Listen, Neil, my friend, take care and have a great day. Cheers.
You too. Bye. Much obliged, Paul Gallagher. Incidentally, there are also different groups that you can get involved in. I mean, it's just not about, you know, rocking up and wanting to chat with the likes of Paul Gallagher, lovely guy and all that he is, but men's sheds are hugely popular now, aren't they? We'll pick it up after 11. I'm a little over time. Text 0868 104 106 after 11.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM. Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation, the Neil Prendeville Show with Dwyer's Electrical Forge Hill. Lots to do between now and midday. And I also mentioned to you also that we have some more passes to give away for Wonder Lights, which is tomorrow night down at Fota House, Ireland's largest light show. So you'll be listening out for your opportunity to get some tickets to go along for that. It's a listener night at Wonder Lights down in Fota House. It's happening on Wednesday night. They're transforming Fota House and Gardens into a winter wonderland with loads of illuminated sculptures and Arctic animals and meadows and glowing winter flowers and the enchanted frozen forest. It will be a wonderful, wonderful place to be for families, couples, groups, work colleagues. There's also a food village there, and you can enjoy the delicious hot food and festive treats, and it'll run all the way up to Christmas. Further details online from Fota House and Gardens. So we'll open the phone lines for that just before midday today. Please don't forget, we also have some great prizes this week to give away, courtesy of ourselves and Standard Life. The whole idea is, if you were to stop work, right, you could retire, or you had a pension fund, say for instance from Standard Life that you grew, and you decided, okay, that's it, I'm off, what would you do with your life? If you could stop now, where would you go? So share those stories. Text 0868 104 106. Daily prizes to give away on that one. More details in a few minutes' time. But on International Men's Day, Una says, it's International Men's Day every day. That's why they don't need it highlighted, says Una. Okay, I'll take that in the light-hearted way in which it's meant. It's ironic that you're talking about International Men's Day and the problems men face, and then you switch to talking about toxic masculinity. they are connected in my book. The struggles of men to be highlighted on International Men's Day, up to and including men who have anger problems, men who have relationships issues, men who have communication issues, men who are derogatory towards women, men who are in jail because of different aspects in their life and the reasons that got them there. All of that surely would be part of International Men's Day. Texter says, masculinity, though, isn't toxic. It's a term coined by left-wing psychologists in the USA. If you actually want to talk about where it comes from, it was a report by the American Psychological Association called Guidelines for the Psychological Practice with Men. And they imply that traditional masculinity, like competitiveness and dominance and aggression, are harmful. They were wrong. And I thought this conversation was long gone. You're suggesting that, yeah, competitiveness and dominance. I have no issue with people being competitive. But aggressive, I would always see that as harmful. Let's celebrate International Men's Day. Don't be giving out bad news and bad stories. Get people to talk about their dads and their granddads who've made big changes in their life that are positive. Good news needs to be shared above bad news. Thank you for that. I need reminding of that from time to time, and you are right. Could I suggest that today, being International Men's Day, that you might message a man in your life that you admire and say something kind or positive or compassionate in an act of friendship or fun or support. Reach out to a man that you know, could be your partner, could be your dad, could be your brother, could be anybody. Just say something or text something nice to a man in your life. Let's be positive about it rather than, as people are suggesting, the misnomer of toxic masculinity. You talk about it without talking about fatherless homes, and you engage in biased activism rather than honest, open, helpful dialogue. There are exceptions to the rule, but the statistics are clear. The children of fatherless homes, particularly male children, perform far worse than children raised in traditional family environments when it comes to education, criminality and violence, says Richie. The statistics would back that up, but it still sounds unkind to women, or indeed men, who have raised children on their own and done a damn good job of it. So keep those coming. Text 0868104106. You're talking about statistics about more men in prison than women. Why not say the statistics about how many men or boys are in prison that came from broken families or have one parent? Thank you. I've covered all of that. Appreciate that. Traditionally, it's been regarded as self-evident that males are more aggressive than females, and that this difference is directly or indirectly linked to testosterone. Another person says, careful when you're drawing conclusions from statistics. Maybe the chance of single mothers living in poverty is greater than men. It could be the case. Maybe the men in prison statistically come from poorer backgrounds and are raised by single mothers in poverty. Yes, indeed. I can't argue or disagree with that. Text 0868104106 to the rearing of boys, as we've been talking about over the last week or so. Shirley, good morning.
Good morning, Neil.
Thanks for taking the time. And this is a mum, lads, who's raised two girls and a boy. Differences between them? Differences in the rearing?
Oh, 100%. I think you'd be very naive to think that everything is cut and dried, one way for boys, one way for girls, or that you can rear them all the same. I think it's a learning curve, definitely. The boy was a learning curve for me anyway, for sure.
Were the girls not a learning curve, or was that a walk in the park?
No, I think you just have to parent them all differently. I think as you get to know them, obviously when you're a first-time mom, everything is new to you. And then when I had the second girl, I was kind of felt like I was an old hand at it. But certainly when you have a boy going through the terrible twos, and it's very different. You have to negotiate it and navigate it quite differently, I feel, anyway.
How old are they now?
So I have an 18-year-old daughter, 15-year-old daughter, and a 13-year-old boy.
Okay. So the boy is the youngest. Spoiled, then, yes. I would suggest.
I wouldn't say that now. I'm not a my son now, but he's good crack now. I'd say we're out the other side of probably a couple of years of arguing and him wanting to have the last word. That was a big difference for me as well. He everything was up for negotiation with him, you know, which I didn't really have with the girls.
As he back chatted or gave cheek or
a bit of back chat.
He challenged everything.
Negotiation. Yes, absolutely. He never accepted your first offer, you know.
All right. Okay. Which is kind of interesting, really, isn't it? Because I usually it, like I was the firstborn, so I was the oldest, right? I had to go through all of the grief and the drama and the restrictions. You can't, and all of that kind of stuff. There was loads of love, don't get me wrong, but I was the oldest, so I had to break ground and break ice for everybody that came after me, right? I had brothers and sisters, but I would imagine that the last born, I always think, is completely and utterly spoiled, because your parents at that stage are well into their stride by baby four or five, and they don't take forgive me for saying that, they don't take it as seriously anymore. No,
I think it depends on the child. I think every child is different, and I think because he was very like that, as I said, he wouldn't accept your first offer of anything. I sort of thought, okay, this is different gravy here. Now we need to drive the ship a little bit differently when it comes to him, because if you give him an inch, he's going to take a mile, and that's just his personality. And I think I found when he came to 8 or 9, there was a definite, like, the little boy, the kind of that you'd be doting on, the baby, the, you know, as you say now, being a little bit maybe indulged or spoiled as the youngest. There was definitely a shift, and I don't know for me if that was coinciding with COVID, where he was cut off from a lot of his friends socially and things like that.
Okay.
And
yeah, that's interesting.
There was a lot of changes at that age, and I think we got him a games console, which we hadn't ever given into, and we didn't give into for the first 12 months of COVID. But then I was getting a lot of text messages from other parents, other moms from the class, being like, oh, can he play online, like all the boys are playing together online? And he had no way of connecting up with them, because he didn't have a phone either, because of his age. So eventually we sort of relented because of COVID, I suppose, as a lot of people probably did. And he got a games console, and there was a big shift then.
Okay, so what were you seeing then? What was that shift? Because he's gaming.
He's gaming. So I suppose he's online with friends, and there started to be a lot of banter, which is fine, and a lot of laughing and a lot of fun, which you love to hear coming out of the bedroom. You know, he's finally reconnecting with friends. But then you get into the competitive side of it. So they were playing all these tournaments now, and, you know, these battle royales or whatever. And all of a sudden, there's a highly competitive element, and they're supposed to be working as a team, and there's a lot of shouting and roaring. There might be a bit of name calling, a bit of aggression coming into it, without a doubt. So we were then listening to this and going, okay, that's not on.
Mm.
You can't speak to anybody like that.
Mm. What is it, like name calling, ridicule, you know, aggressive,
yeah,
anger, frustration, things like that, yeah.
Exactly. There'd be a bit of firing the remote control, the control around the place.
Okay.
There'd be a little bit of that.
Okay.
Things that we felt like we had to nip in the bud, because what gradually started happening was that level of frustration was emerging offline.
Okay. In the real world, you were seeing those kind of incidents.
Yeah, so he'd be arguing with his sisters, or he wouldn't get his way, and there'd be a little bit of slamming of the door, and the voice would be raised. So we instantly then were like, "This, the advent of the gaming and being online," which he wouldn't have been online for a long period of time in stretches. We would have limited it. We were like, okay, we really need to control this, and we really need to be monitoring this, because it seems to be okay. And I can hear the other boys online. I can hear them all doing the same thing.
Is this online world, this gaming world, it isn't exclusively boys, is it? But is it a case that just boys in their group only have boys gaming with them?
Boys in his group only had boys gaming. Yeah. I have two girls, and one of them got very into Roblox and Minecraft and was playing online with her friends a little bit during COVID as well, but she never got into it. She never got as invested in it as he did. And I don't know if that's just a culture thing. I don't know that the boys are so much more into gaming. I know there's plenty of girls out there into it. But for him, that was the only social outlet they had for a while. But it was something that we felt we really had to monitor.
And how did you get on monitoring it? Or did you have to start limiting it? Or was there a pushback and limiting it?
We were limiting it. I was taking the controller to work with me.
Wow.
So they couldn't be tempted during the day.
Wow.
No, he wasn't. Like, this is not a child who was gaming for hours at a time, but it was just, it would escalate really quickly if they got into a tournament. And, you know, you see an awful lot of videos online of TikTok of parents imitating the kids, you know, my son when he's on TikTok, and it's really funny. But actually, when it's in your house and you're observing it and you're trying to correct it, there's not a whole lot of humour in it.
So here's the problem with it. It's not staying in the console. It's not staying in the game. It's not staying in the gaming. It's happening in real life. It becomes part of their personality. Right. Is it easier to kind of have an honest chat with the son, or do they not want to do that? Or do you know what I mean? Did you find opportunities to be able to say, okay, we need to have a chat, and just no raising of voices, just talking about how you're feeling?
Yeah, I think this depends on your child, right? So for us, he's a child that was very much, if you were saying to him, we need to sit down and have a conversation about the words you're using or the language, he would instantly, it would be like pushing a button, and he'd be defensive and he would not want to engage. So I find for us, this is what works for us, the car is a great space. I find sometimes with him, side-by-side conversation is a lot more open than face-to-face. And it works really well. We're in the car a lot, as anybody with boys will know, when you've training and sport and school. We're in the car a lot. So that's my opportunity to have those conversations with him where he doesn't feel kind of backed into a corner. He's not on the defensive. It's open, and he also knows it's time sensitive. This will end the minute I get out of the car.
Yeah.
This conversation is a limited window, but it works really well for us. And he's so open in the car. I don't react because I'm driving. So you're not getting, I'm not flying off the handle. I'm not getting, you know, it's a kind of a safe space for him, and yeah, it works really well. And he's well able now, as I say, like, we've come out the other side of all of that. The gaming, I think we sort of had to identify other things that would capture his attention and his focus. And, like, he loves sport as well, but other things. Like, he's big into DIY and he likes helping around and he likes having jobs to do. He's very task-orientated. So that helps. And I think, you know, when you create that safe space for them to say, I didn't realise I was being angry. I didn't realise I was speaking the same way to the girls that I was speaking when I was gaming. I didn't realise I had to raise my voice. And I'm not really reacting because I'm driving the car. He's not afraid to say anything. He's not afraid
that's
of
good.
Being
that's
given
good.
Out to.
Yeah, that's
you know,
good.
And it works really well. I mean, that mightn't be for everyone, but it works really well.
No, and just my worry or concern would be that there is a huge difference between boys and girls, and much of that has to do with testosterone, frustration and anger in young boys that goes on to be angry young men, going on to grow on to be angry men and grown men. Do you know what I mean? Adults. And I'm wondering, is that always what it's going to be? And it's never really, I mean, there's the exception and the extraordinary examples of women, of course, that are angry and crazy and violent. But by and large, it's men, you know?
Yeah, and I think, look, we're very mindful of how we're parenting now compared to maybe my parents or your parents. We're way more mindful of different children of different needs, whereas before everybody was sort of raised the same way, and you grow up how you grow up. And
yeah, but women unfortunately are afraid of men. Women are afraid of men they don't know. They're afraid of stranger men. This is not an incident. This is not a consequence for men, but it is for women.
No.
And is that ever are we ever going to be able to change that?
I think it's a very long road because we're now, as well as trying to raise emotionally healthy men and boys, we're trying to raise men to make women feel safe and teach them. I'm trying to teach my son why women don't feel safe.
Yeah.
Because he's totally ignorant to that. He's no concept of that. Of how, like, and his dad would be very much like, you know, if it's dark and you're out walking, if they're out walking the dog, if there's a woman coming towards you, and then cross the road and give her the space.
Absolutely.
Because it can be intimidating. And it's as much as the negative behaviour is learned, the positive behaviour is very much learned as well. And I think that's very important.
And maybe
it's a very long road.
But maybe it's a road where it's a never-ending road. Maybe it will always be this way in a world that's getting more violent, more sinister,
mm-hmm.
more troubled, and more vicious and more angry. That I don't see us ever backing out of any of this. I'd be depressing people. But this seems to be a reality.
I think if you, like, part of the battle is to make boys feel emotionally safe. Like, it's important for women to feel emotionally safe in their relationships or whatever, but it's very important for boys to feel emotionally safe and not to have emotions dismissed, as I know you were referencing it last week, of boys being labelled bold in the class because maybe they speak up or maybe they call out behaviour. And that's a very fine line. And also making them feel like if they're emotional, like after losing a match, that they're crying, that you're not going, come on now, it's just a game.
So you break? Do we break it down then when they're very small? When it's like the clothing that they wear? You know, you have cases now where you hear of non-gendering children who are born. I will not gender him male. I will not gender her female. We will wait and see, and they shall decide themselves. Is that a way forward? I mean, just wondering. Is it like don't control the clothes or the type of clothes they wear or the type of toys that they play with? Do you know what I mean?
I don't think that really comes into it. Not for us anyway, and I'm no expert by any means, and we're all out here raising kids to be the best humans they can be. Not the best man they can be or the best woman, just the best human being. But I think sometimes if you are creating a space for them to feel safe to tell you that they're frustrated, that they're annoyed, that they feel wronged, that they, you know, that you're not dismissing anything that they're saying, that's more important to me than the style of clothes they're wearing or the type of toys you present them with. You know, like every child, if you've, you know, boy siblings or girl siblings in a house, there's going to be boy and girl toys just naturally because they're given to them. They'll all play with it and then they'll find their own things that they prefer to play with. I don't know, you know, there's no issue with buying a boy a doll or buying a girl, you know.
And I never had a big deal about it. I would have been more of an issue, say, for instance, of pornography than anything to do with the toys that you play with or the colour clothes that you wear. Do you know what I mean? That pornography isn't real, that it is actors, and that what you're seeing people are paid to do, and people don't really feel that sex should be or is like that. Whereas what they're seeing is they're seeing pornography as being, and particularly violent pornography, you know, where men are dominant and physically violent. That's a terrible message to give to young people, to young men. Do you know, it really is.
It is, and I think it's important like that, if you can find how any of your kids, you know, because it's important as well that girls know this is not the normal expectation to have of a woman.
No.
You know what I mean?
And do young girls feel that they have to submit to young men because that's an expectation?
Well, I can tell you the girls in my house don't.
I know.
I think, you know, I think it's very much the dialogue and the communication and an open, safe space to say something when you're young, you know, that nobody's going to dismiss you and say, oh, come on, cop on a small bit now, I think you're overreacting. And I'm not talking about being super woke and all of this crap, but I'm just saying that you listen to them without judgment, that they feel they can come to you and tell you things that maybe their friends aren't telling their parents. You
and
know,
here's the thing.
They feel safe.
Here's the thing. And I don't mean to hog the conversation here, and my kids are reared now, 28 and 30, but here's the thing with young people. Imagine that they must be drowning in worry and fear of life and expectation because they're surrounded by all of these fake positive messages of brilliantness and success and money and fame and fortunes. And they're wondering, oh my God, none of this is happening for me. We have more young men killing themselves than anybody else now, unfortunately. And I'm wondering, is it because they're lost? You know, they're lost and they feel that they don't fit in. As maybe that's making them angry then when they don't fit in.
Absolutely. And I think that old phrase of comparison is the thief of joy is so, so true for this generation because they're constantly comparing. They're constantly competing. They live in a very different bubble than what we lived in. There's no downtime. They can't switch off. They can't leave people behind at the end of the school day the way we used to do. Everybody is with them at all times. It's a lot. They live in a very noisy world and their heads are very busy. So I think it's important for them to, like, you're trying to give them the skills of identifying what's real and what's not and what matters and what doesn't. You know, and it's a minefield. There's no doubt about it. But I actually do think that having the conversations exactly like this, like you've been talking about this now for a couple of days, and it's led us. We've had conversations in the car.
Sure.
You know, it starts a conversation, and it's like I know Viv said last week, you know, she asks her boys like, "What positives did you take from today?" And we always do that. Yeah. I think that's a really good one. We do that after sport because they're highly competitive and they're at a different level of sport now because they're teenagers. So it's important that if they lose. And it's not all, you know, participation medal stuff. It's kind of like, what did you learn? Not everybody can win. Somebody has to lose every time. But as long as there's something to take away from it in terms of what you learned or how you felt you did, something good.
Let's not raise children where everyone's a winner. Because you want them
absolutely
to have the
not
edge as well. They're, you know, you want to be a winner. You don't want to be the loser. I mean, and even saying that sounds awful, but there has to be...
I think it's... it's not even that you want to be the winner. You want to know that you didn't leave anything on the pitch. You want to know you didn't leave anything on the table.
Mm. There's, better said.
We'd often have that conversation of, you know, is there anything you would have done differently there? What would you have done differently? Let's look back at it. And again, like that happens a lot after matches in the car on the way home. And then when we get out of the car, we're like, we've left this now. A loss is a loss. You can change nothing.
Yeah.
And we have to move forward.
Okay. Covered a lot of ground. Just before I let you go, because Viv was only telling me, because Viv has boys, right? And this all started about rearing boys. She's actually in a WhatsApp group with other mothers of boys. They have an exclusive WhatsApp group of mums of boys. I mean, would the same exist for a WhatsApp group of mums of girls, I wonder? And what does a group of women in a WhatsApp group of rearing boys actually talk about? The difficulties of it, I suppose?
I think sometimes it's like, this is uncharted water to me. I'm hitting a wall here with him. Have any of you been through this? Like, you know, sharing best practice can always help. And somebody else's, a fresh set of eyes on a situation can give you a little bit of perspective. And I think that's really beneficial. I think, like, I'm not in any of those kind of groups. I suppose I only have one boy. But even with the girls, I have always made it my business to get to know the parents of their friends. That's really important as well. Know who your kids are hanging out with. Have an open line of communication. We have boyfriends on the scene now as well. So having a really good communication with parents of boyfriends, knowing where they are, knowing what the rules are in someone else's house, and making sure that your child is respecting them, and double-checking that if they say they're going somewhere, that you're double-checking with another parent.
The boys and the girls.
And
is it trust
boys
neither?
And girls. They're teenagers. Come on now.
Right. Okay. Listen, lovely chatting, Shirley. Thanks for listening. Appreciate your contribution this morning. Have a good one. On the subject of men being vulnerable, can't come on the air talking about men, but you should check out Barry McGuigan on I'm a Celebrity Monday night. He was talking about his daughter's illness and her death. He cried and spoke of his grief. He showed such bravery, strength and vulnerability, and he's being praised online as a result of his vulnerability. He has shown that even the toughest men struggle, even the toughest men cry, that it's okay to share your sadness and your grief. It was so powerful. The compassion, the support and the kindness he was shown by the campmates was amazing too. I cried and cried watching him. His pain was palpable. An excellent example of men sharing their feelings and how impactful that can be. I'm delighted you sent that text. I really am, for the day that's in it, International Men's Day. When I heard Niall Breslin open up about his mental health issues, I think he was such a fantastic role model and opened the gateways for a lot of young people, Brezzy did. Loads of people suffer from anxiety and other mental health issues. It's so much healthier to talk and acknowledge feelings than ignore them. There's something so endearing and refreshing about recognizing and respecting vulnerability. I'll tell you one thing I remember. I remember being in my late teens and feeling absolutely lost, right? Where nothing's working out. Now, I know that we were in the middle of shocking bad recession at the time. I was had very little money, I had nowhere to live. I was pretty much close enough to homelessness at the time. And I'll never forget that kind of sense of vulnerability and failure and kind of loss and disappointment. So I can only imagine now what it must be like for somebody who's of that age, right? Who has been told, you know, the world owes you nothing, you know, work hard, study hard, do the best you can. Doing all of that, not perhaps doing all that well in school and not doing terribly great in this ridiculous charade of a point system and a college education that's supposed to solve everything and only causes more problems than solves things, because you end up in courses or following, you know, third level education courses that you have no interest of ever making a career out of. Can you imagine all of those messages that a young person is getting and how impactful that must be on them? You know, like that they're not fitting in, that things are not working out, and then of course it can lead to lots of different things. Sadly, unfortunately, self-harm or the taking of one's own life, but also just anger as well, you know, anger and frustration and hatred and envy and jealousy. Because they were sold a lie. A bit like, you know, I imagine an awful lot of Americans feel that way about the country that they live in. And, you know, I tell you what I feel. Even watching 2 hours of those politicians last night made me so angry and so frustrated that here we are again, and yet year in, year out, we listen to all of this, these promises, these platitudes of how great things are and how much better they're going to be when they're not. And I don't know that we have the sea change that we need to make things better. When you see what was put before us last night, as the leaders of various political parties, who I'm sure in their own rights are nice people, but really haven't a hope. And nothing will really change. And for all the years that I've been following general elections, there's nothing now to be excited about. There's nothing to be optimistic about, in spite of the fact that we're a country that's just apparently, they say, awash with money. It's so frustrating. A quick comment on International Men's Day, Neil. I walk to my car with my car keys held in my hand. I take out my earphones when I run. I take the details of any taxi that I get into. I don't walk alone anymore in the evening. I cover my drink with my hand on a night out. I share my location with a friend in a taxi home from a night out. Would I do these things if the world was women? If this was a world of just women, I suppose? Absolutely not. Text 0868104106. Back after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
I actually tried to put together some audio that would be of interest to you with regards to last night's debate between all of the party leaders. And we really couldn't stitch stuff together that was interesting enough that wouldn't lead to people tuning out. I mean, it's summed up by somebody who says the debate was more of the same, wasn't it? Harris and Martin, like two Jack Russells, every time Mary Lou opened her mouth, Simon Harris just wouldn't admit he signed off on the Children's Hospital in his disastrous time as a Minister of Health, and that it was a Fine Gael project. He would admit to it. Also, this giveaway talk is based on the economy staying as it is when they know that it won't, says Anthony. That is a fantastic pickup, Anthony. Well done. Simon Harris would not admit to the fact that he was the minister and he was responsible for signing off on the Children's Hospital. But that was more visual than anything. It was like the look on his face. You know, look in his face. And the one or two other little, where a few points were landed. I saw Mary Lou was, again, look on her face. She was speechless when Micheál Martin said, where's the fact of, you walked away as a party from Irish sovereignty or getting involved in the constitutionality of Ireland for 70 years. And in other news, we're killing members of An Garda Síochána. The look on her face was absolute, like as if, you know, she drained white at one stage. But other than that, looks like it's going to be the same old crowd back in again, isn't it? What has any of the Cork TDs ever done for the city anyway? Like whatever happened to the North Ring Road? There will be a time for change, though. I mean, you look at South Central now. Simon Coveney's not running. You know, Michael McGrath isn't running. His brother will get elected. Seamus McGrath, Mick Finn probably will win. Perhaps a seat in South Central, or at least that's where they're speculating now. Also, actually, interestingly, I heard on RTE this morning, they're saying, I think it was at Pascal Sheehy, he was saying that he figures that Micheál Martin will top the poll. Anyway, that's for another day, maybe. Not one right-wing party there last night. What does that say about RTE? Asher, you won't read this text out anyway. Gotcha. Actually, I would suggest that maybe Independent Ireland probably would be right of centre, wouldn't they? They'd be on the right. Maybe not right enough for you, but right nonetheless. And don't get me wrong, we need right-wing politics. We do. I mean, it's not far or ultra or uber right. We don't need those because that can be quite nasty and hurtful and quite worrying and sinister. But right-wing parties, absolutely. You need the left, you need the middle, and you need the right. Right now, everything in Ireland is just shoved into this kind of broom closet of left, where everybody seems to want to be. And of course, that hasn't worked. You see the world changing now around with the likes of Donald Trump and what have you. But for the day that's in it, my apologies. Ronan, good morning. I've kept you for way too long. Good morning. What's on your mind?
Good morning, Neil. I just wanted to I sent on that text there about celebrating the International Men's Day today and not have positive thoughts on it rather than negative. That's the common thing.
And you are right, so feel free to do so, to say something positive. And you are right. I've been talking a bit about rearing boys and issues like that. I appreciate that. But if it were International Women's Day, we'd probably be having all sorts of events and coffee mornings and get-togethers. But for men, it's nothing really, isn't it? Nothing.
Well, it's nothing. No, I don't hear it. Only that you said it this morning, no, we wouldn't have heard. But I'm involved in a men's shed here local and involved in a lot of great men. So just to celebrate the day that's in it and to realise, you know, our dads and granddads and all that, just a thumbs up and a clap and just to mention all the people and all the men.
You might find this funny for the day that's in it. Neil, you mentioned men's sheds. Men's sheds are for those men that can't hold their drink or are too boring or too mean to drink.
Well, that has to be the most horrible statement I've ever heard in my life.
I don't think it's meant to be that way, though. It's just a bit of a laugh.
I'm a secretary in a men's shed in Douglas, and there's 40 members there, and from start to finish. They're exceptional men.
I saw a guy, and I totally agree with you, and I saw a guy out in the Douglas area recently. Was that a Douglas one he was wearing? One of the yellow high-vis with men's shed on the back of it? Would that have been the Douglas one?
Not the yellow one. We wear an orange one, but we do a lot of work in the community for elderly people who don't get out of the houses, and we have members who deal with depression and loneliness and different elements, but
and men's sheds
is disgusting, really. Like I can't believe somebody would text in that. You know,
men's sheds are for those who can't hold their drink. I mean, it's not meant to be. I don't think it's meant to be a bit of a laugh, and sometimes we should just not have a bit of a laugh. You don't see it that way.
I don't see it that way because it's a facility for men in the area who are dealing with different things, and it's a fantastic.
Of course, it gave men an opportunity to open up and chat and have conversations that matter. And that's one of the problems is that men don't talk.
Men don't talk. Women will get together and have coffees and we'll meet every day of the week. But I find with men that they need something different. And I think a men's shed environment is absolutely fantastic where they can go and they can do a bit of woodworking and gardening and they get to chat together while they're working rather than... You'll never get a man will meet another man for coffee. Very rarely, now.
Very rarely, yeah. And I think that's somewhat an Irish thing, isn't it? I mean, you go overseas and you do see, you know, as you can see it in Italy, Arab countries are very good at it, where men do sit down. Maybe it's just the different cultures. But we don't tend to do that.
No, we don't. And it's probably the old style and old ways that you, if you're sick, you don't talk about it. Again, I keep going back to the men's shed thing. It's just that it creates an environment where they can work, where they can be active and get relaxed with the person beside them. And the chatting thing is our way of a coffee shop, and it's a new way of instead of going to a pub, which most of these men don't go to anymore because of access and whatever. But no, I think the men's shed is like International Men's Day, something that's not shouted about enough. I think it's.
Tell me this.
We got a visit from Simon Harris recently, and. And the lads turned around and said to him, do you realise what we're doing here? And he said, what? He said, we're keeping all these men out of the hospital, he said. Which I thought was one of the best statements I've ever heard.
And I would imagine as well, to some extent, lives have been saved from depression.
100%. 100%. Everybody has a story, and we could tell you 40 stories as well. But
is there any kind of age group in particular? Would one associate it with the chaps and lads who are retired? Or are we talking about younger, by and large?
Well, I'm 47.
That's young.
I'm 45. It can be anything you want. Men's shed, everybody thinks a men's shed is for retired people. It's not. It's for people of any ages, and you don't have to have any skills. You come up and you learn skills, but what these people have is talents that are nearly forgotten about and need to be shared to younger people going forward. Trades, stuff on woodworking and stuff like that, stuff you never see anymore. And it's amazing what to see in these guys.
How do you finance something like that, say Douglas Men's Shed? How do you keep the lights on?
Well, it's funded through it's very good to sort of the Cork City Council through grants. We also fund ourselves through we make kindling and we do our sales and it goes straight back into the shed. And we do fundraising events as well, and the local businesses are very good to us. But I think mainly it's the city council through the grants that we've turned around and created a great venue, and it was getting bigger and but the local people support us as well. They're fantastic, all the local groups as in the Tidy Towns. You've got heart and everything.
Somebody listening to this right now, and just slightly conscious of time, Ronan, but if somebody's listening to this right now and they think, you know what, that could well be for me, what should they do?
Well, they should contact us. Our phone number is on the website. If you go into Men's Shed Ireland and go into Douglas Frankfield Men's Shed, and then the contact numbers are there, and we get people to call up. Now we're closed for membership this year, but just get people to call up and have a look around, and everybody's welcome. It's no matter who you are, or male, female, or just to come up and see what these men do. It's just an amazing thing. But if you'd like to join, we look into membership in the new year again, but it's just to celebrate. And I just thought, just need to be said today, a positive thing, that I know there's a lot of negative stories coming there, and I said, if you ever want a positive thing, come up to the men's shed.
No, I know, and you are right. Yeah. I suppose that aspect of it was rearing boys to become good men, you know what I mean? Maybe they're not connected. I think that there is some kind of a connection there, but I do appreciate what you're saying. Let's celebrate International Men's Day and celebrate men on this day. And you are right in that regard, so fair play to you. Good to catch up, Ronan. Continued success with what you do. Take care. Take care.
Thank you, Neil.
Text 0868104106 after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Standard Life giving me €350 vouchers to give away every day this week. One for all vouchers. And on Friday, a €600 voucher for the Blue Book. It's all about what would you do if you could stop work and just retire? Standard Life feel retirement isn't the end of something. It's the beginning of something new. I don't know what it is with all you guys who want to open all sorts of shelters for dogs and cats and chickens and goats. Non-profit dog sanctuaries, indoor dog parks with toys and agility courses for animals. You're all animal mad. You're all dog mad. I love the one from an unsigned texter who wants to become a professional sangria drinker in Spain. The dream retirement. Anyway, Claire, good morning. I got about 2 minutes, so sell me on this for a €350 voucher. Go for it. Well, she's not going to sell me on it because she ain't on the phone. Hang on, we'll see if we can get her on a different phone line. I think she wanted... Anyway, my interest was piqued when I heard about traveling across the USA.
Texas, America? Yeah.
Hang on, start. Hey, rewind there. Back up. Start again. Go ahead.
Hey, I'd rent a car and drive around the USA for a few months. I'd go to Louisiana, Texas, different places like that. But ultimately, Neil, if I retired, what I'd do is spend a ton of money on decking out the garden in a winter wonderland and have the charity box at the front gate for West Cork Rapid Response.
I listen to her, Mother Teresa herself, like, yeah, Mother Teresa herself.
Well, hang on, no, yeah. Because
the dogs or cats, yeah.
My brother of life was saved by Dr. Jason. He was the first person in Ireland to be intubated outside of a hospital setting. And Dr. Jason...
What happened? Was it an accident? Oh, my God. There was a tractor on top of him. What?
Literally, he was flung from the cab and the tractor hopped on top of him.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, it's just... It just blows our minds.
And so Dr. Jason Vandeveld came along, rapid responder, a medic, works in A&E, works in the emergency rooms and what have you. And what did he do?
Had any other paramedic come along, he'd have just thrown him into the back of an ambulance and gone straight to CUH. But because Dr. Jackson's a fully whatever doctor, he was allowed and able to intubate him there on site, which saved his life.
What's that tube down the throat job, isn't it? Get him breathing kind of thing.
Yeah.
Wow.
A normal paramedic can't do that. So he'd 100% have died the crater only for Dr. Jason. I swear, it makes me so emotional to think about it even now, you know?
Okay. So when you're finished with your Texas and your Louisiana and your southern state food and barbecues and all that deliciousness down there, home to set up a winter wonderland, raise money for the West Cork Rapid Response annually. Wow. How is your brother now? Is he good?
He's great. He's got a wife. He's living in Tasmania and he's slaying it.
He's living in Tasmania, married, fell in love, all because of Dr. Jason. I love it. But hold on, I'm out of time now. But here you are again. Everybody thinks they can get a bit of love from me because they're into dogs and cats and chickens and goats. And you say, oh, and I also want to raise hens. Why? You can buy eggs in Dunn's, like, and they're perfectly fine.
Oh, Neil, they have fabulous personalities. I have four at the moment and we just want to grow our hen family. We love them.
Are they filthy things? No. I had a buddy who raised hens. He had the coop and the run and everything. They were filthy, horrible things. Got rid of it. No?
Yeah, they smell in the winter.
There you go. Arrest my case.
At themselves. But sure, they're lovable all the same. I'm looking out at them now and I'm just... Hi, guys.
Have they got names?
Yeah, so I have Finn, Rusty, Perdita... and Nancy Gray.
Yeah, enough said.
You know, American Nancy Grace. Well, I love her, so I went for Nancy Gray.
All right. Okay. I love your little world. Stay listening. Stay living in it. You're very, very happy there. I give you €351 for all voucher only because Dr. Jason saved your brother's life and if you also raise hens. Have a good one. Take care.
Oh, thank you, Neil. Thank you so much.
All right, take care. €350 voucher for one for all. Back in the morning, lines will stay open. You can text 0868 104 106. Thank you to Standard Life. We'll do some more in the morning. Have a good day. I'll see you tomorrow.